This is Radio Superior 1945, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1945. This is a true story of our past. Step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the Great Lakes station, KUWS. Jack McKenna reminding you, if you go faster than the victory speed of 30 miles per hour, you'll slow the war effort. It's 6 o'clock Central Standard Wartime, Thursday, April 19th, 1945. Lou Martin is in with the 6 o'clock news. Museum curator Gerald Stowe will have something really old. And Uncle Bob and the Fair and Square Kids will read us some stories.
I'm not sure that's a good combination. The museum curator, he's kind of scary. The kids might be frightened.
He's so pale. Jeez. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Popkins Furniture. Popkins is featuring a 3-foot-wide mahogany bookcase for just $24.50 and cotton mattresses for $12.95. Evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. More news about a horror camp uncovered in Germany. The Reds are within shooting range of Berlin. Leipzig is captured by the First Army, and Superior State Teachers College President Jim Danhill has been named that city's military governor. We begin our World Shortwave Radio Report with William Fry with the British Second Army in Germany.
This is Bergen-Belsen, William Fry, your correspondent. Prisoners of the Belsen concentration camp were freed by General Sir Miles Dempsey's men, but these men were not prepared for what they found, a stinking, filthy horror camp with 39,000 prisoners and uncounted dead. There are cases of typhus, typhoid, tuberculosis, and starvation, piles of unburied corpses in vast heaps, and one cavernous pit filled with blackened bodies. In the midst of this were 500 children. Why they were prisoners here is incomprehensible. Babies were born here daily in this horror camp. The senior medical officer of the British Second Army, who has been here since Sunday, told me that anything I've seen does not even begin to tell the story. Horror camp is what the medical officer calls it. Even as General Dempsey's men arrived at the camp, Nazi SS guards were still shooting prisoners, stealing potatoes. The SS had failed to abide by the surrender terms to turn in their arms because they feared vengeance by the camp's victims who were emaciated because of the SS inhumanity. The guards were disarmed and are now cleaning the camp. There's no way of knowing how many died here, but incomplete records reveal 30,000 died in the past few months in Belsen. In the middle of the camp, there is a mound about the size of a football field piled table high. They all appear to be women. They are all naked. While the medical officer was inspecting the camp, he saw four girls carry another corpse from the barracks and add it to the fearful stack of death. A woman laid the body of her own child on the heap. People are still dying. The medical officer says that even with the best care and diet, thousands cannot be saved. The officer said large Red Cross parcels sent by Jews reached the camp but were never distributed. They were not even used by the Germans but were withheld out of sheer malevolence. There is yet no indication what proportion of these people are Jews, but the assumption is that it is high. At Belsen concentration camp in Germany, this is William Fry. Calling London, come in, Great Britain.
This is London calling. Bud Miller, your correspondent. Atrocities in German camps are bringing a warning from the British Prime Minister Winston Churchill. He gave sour warning today to the Germans against prison camp atrocities. He's preparing a document to be signed by himself, Marshal Stalin, and President Truman. The foreign secretaries in Washington are preparing the paper. Russian Secretary Molotov, Britain's Anthony Eden, and U.S. Secretary of State Stettinius say they will hold responsible not only the men at the top who ordered this murderous treatment, but also the people who have done this foul work with their own hands. The matter has become one of urgency and will be discussed by the big three. Mr. Eden disclosed that only this morning Mr. Churchill had been briefed by General Eisenhower about other such camps in Germany and Poland. General Eisenhower said these camps surpassed the brutality in the Weimar region where the Buchenwald camp is located. The general has issued an invitation to members of parliament to view the atrocities firsthand. In London, this is Webb Miller, calling Germany, come in Leipzig.
Hello, this is the Third Reich in the newly captured city of Leipzig. The war ended for Leipzig today, and the million or more Germans jammed into this historic city seem to be glad of it. Tens of thousands of citizens turned out to watch the parade of the America First Army's triumphal entry. Many waved and greeted the doughboys who had beaten the toughest of Hitler's supermen. Mingled with the street crowds were hundreds of liberated American, Russian, British, and Polish prisoners who yelled, cheered, and wept with joy. EFC Fred Olberg of Chicago says it was like Paris, except they don't have flowers or fruit to throw at us. For the tired foot soldiers who had fought through the Leipzig flak barrage and then rooted out the Nazi garrison street by street, there was little thrill left in taking this once great oil center. The Germans fought like wild men, and a few diehards were shooting from barricades until mid-morning today. But even before the battle ended, German citizens closed their shops and offices and swarmed to see their American conquerors. They didn't show animosity. In fact, many seemed glad the war was over for them. In one little bar room where some GIs were congregating to sample the stock, an old red-faced German entered and demanded a short beer. He explained he always got a beer there every morning. EFC Aubrey Sheldon of Los Angeles took charge of the situation, quoting him, "We told him a new order had made some changes. No beer. He skapooted in a hurry." Private First Class James Mays of Richmond, Indiana, watched one group of Germans cheering the American column. "Funny thing," he said. "We fought like hell to get in here, and now we find the people glad to see us." About three-quarters of the city is in ruins. 14 months of strategic bombing by the U.S. 8th Air Force has piled up terrible damage to the city's sprawling oil refineries vital to the German war machine. But for these people, anyway, the war and terror of being citizens of the Third Reich is over. Tomorrow, Colonel Jim Dan Hill of Superior, Wisconsin, will take over as military governor of Leipzig. In Leipzig with the First Army, this is Max Jordan, calling the Eastern Front.
This is the Eastern Front. Don Whitehead at the Siege of Berlin. The closest Red Army troops are just 14 miles from Berlin's city limits, within artillery range of the battered city. Nazi radio is admitting that Russian tanks have smashed through Berlin's frontal defenses as the long-awaited Battle of Berlin is underway. Fighting is bitter. Red Army troops are slowed by close-range fighting, going from barricade to barricade. To the south, Russian forces plunged beyond the shattered Denisi River in an attempt to link up with the American Third Army some 60 miles to the west. One vague German radio report said two tank armies from Marshal Ivan Konev's 1st Ukrainian Army had already broken through to Finsterwald. Capture of that suburb would leave the Germans only two railroad lines of escape from Berlin. It would also bring the Red Army within 47 miles of the American First Army. The Soviet High Command remains silent about this offensive, now in its fourth day. There is speculation that Marshal Stalin will wait until Hitler's 56th birthday on Friday to announce the breakthrough. Along the Eastern Front, this is Don Whitehead, calling the Pacific. Come in, Guam.
This is Pacific HQ in Guam. Frank Tremaine, your reporter. A second Yank landing has been made at Mindanao. The second most important Philippine island will be tough to take, with the Japs entrenched here since before the war. Battle-tempered Yanks of Major General Woodruff's 24th Division drove ashore 2 days ago at Milabang and Perry against light opposition. They now control 35 miles of coastline. Associated Press correspondent Russell Brines went ashore with the first wave of troops. He says they drove 3 miles inland in the first few hours.
He expects stiffer opposition once they get inland and closer to Mindanao's main city of Davao, 85 miles to the east. Military sources place 50,000 Nipponese troops on Mindanao. Previous Mindanao landing was March 10th on the Zamboanga Peninsula by the 41st Division. They took the strategic fort and peninsula, but a wild mountainous region separates them from the rest of the island. Much of the initial gains were credited to the help of Colonel Wendell Furtick of Boulder, Colorado, and his guerrilla fighters. Colonel Furtick was at Bataan at the beginning of the war, but escaped to Mindanao, where he organized underground guerrilla squads. In Guam, with Pacific headquarters, this is Frank Tremaine calling Okinawa. Come in, Grant MacDonald.
This is E Island off of Okinawa. Grant MacDonald, your correspondent. Ernie Pyle will be buried here tomorrow with simple honors alongside other G.I. Joes, his friends and comrades in life and death. Army Chaplain N.B. Saucier of Coffeeville, Mississippi, went with litter bearers under Japanese fire to recover the body of the famed war correspondent, will officiate. The little guy, beloved by every G.I. Joe, fell in action yesterday on E Island, a place no one ever heard of. Before going into action, he signed some short snorter notes for two privates, Louis Vespol of Long Island, New York, and Patsy Rubino of White Plains, New York. Then he got into the Jeep with Lieutenant Colonel Joseph Coolidge of Helena, Arkansas. We were riding along, recalled Coolidge, when we were fired on by a Jap machine gun. He drove into a ditch. A little later, Pyle and I looked up. That's when a bullet hit him in his left temple just below his helmet. Pyle told friends on Guam and the Marianas Islands that he had a premonition that something would happen to him in the next operation. Despite people advising him to stay behind, the little columnist continued on with invasion forces. One of the last things Ernie Pyle said about the front was, life up there is very simple, very uncomplicated, devoid of all of the jealousy and meanness that float around a headquarters city. On E Island, this is Grant MacDonald, calling the British Isles, come in London.
This is London. Lewis Lochner here. A somber king and queen and a prime minister who wept for his old friend joined American servicemen and women in a tribute to the late Franklin Roosevelt in battle-scarred St. Paul's Cathedral today. Princess Elizabeth accompanied King George and Queen Elizabeth. Prime Minister Winston Churchill called himself President Roosevelt's lieutenant. Netherlands Queen Wilhelmina, King Haakon, and Crown Prince Olaf of Norway, King George of Greece, King Peter of Yugoslavia, and representatives from Poland, all governments in exile since 1940, were there too. The high and humble were at the gathering of 2,200 people which filled the cathedral. Thousands stood in the streets in the warm spring sunshine. Mr. Churchill broke into tears during the prayer for the repose of the president. At the conclusion of the 40-minute service, Mr. Churchill and American Ambassador Winant walked down the aisle of the church together, the Prime Minister looking quite pale. The singing of the Star-Spangled Banner and God Save the King ended the ceremony. In London, this is Lewis Lochner.
In other war news, American units today have smashed the last organized resistance in the Ruhr, culminating perhaps the greatest single victory of the war. Supreme Headquarters says mopping up stragglers is almost complete in the Ruhr. This means that the great cities of Dusseldorf, Solingen, Remscheid, and Barnum are in the hands of the 1st and the 9th Armies. The Ruhr Valley produced 75% of Hitler's war material as late as 1942. General Omar Bradley says 320,000 German prisoners were taken from the Ruhr, and more remained to be counted. Meanwhile, British troops closed to within 6 miles of the great continental port of Hamburg today, reaching the lower Elbe River along a 20-mile front. And American troops fought hand-picked SS troops in the Bavarian city of Nuremberg. That city is surrounded. U.S. casualties in fighting on Okinawa are almost 8,000. Admiral Chester Nimitz released the figures today. These numbers date back to March the 16th, when U.S. carrier planes began strafing the islands in advance of the Easter Sunday invasion. Of those casualties, 1,500 were Marines that were killed. That compares to more than 9,000 Japanese soldiers killed in the defense of Okinawa. for the first time in the Pacific War, naval casualties exceeded the Army and Marines. A massive 1,400-ship armada has been under constant fire by Japanese planes, including kamikaze or suicide attacks. American Third Army troops in Germany made a spectacular find today. Supreme Allied Headquarters reports they captured a list of all Allied prisoners of war. This important seizure was made by Major General Manton Eddy's 12th Corps, the same soldiers who captured the German Gold Reserve. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:09. Jack McKenna has these words from Popkin Furniture.
So, who gets that gold?
It'd be nice if the 12th Corps could keep some of it.
Well, maybe there'll be small but heavy packages in the mail home pretty soon.
Let's hear from Popkin's Furniture. You know where they are, of course. Everybody knows about Popkin's.
I don't know if you know about the specials going on right now. Popkin's is at 518 Tower Avenue, where your dollar buys most, and that's important.
You folks at home with the tiny little creature coming along pretty soon, you may be going to need a sturdy crib, as a matter of fact. I know darn well you will. And they're selling for just $12.95 at Popkin's right now. And how about a spring-mounted baby buggy, huh? $16.95, that's all. That's good for your child. Spring-mounted carriage deluxe, $16.95. I can't believe it. High chairs, ho-ho. High chairs, $7.95. And those mattresses that I told you about earlier in the program, bedroom suites, are available at $129. And you got the whole bedroom outfitted for you at Popkin's Furniture Company, 518 520 Tower Avenue in Superior. Lou?
Word was received in Millen yesterday that the son of Mr. and Mrs. Nicholas Dillon was killed in action in Germany March the 28th. Private First Class Dillon is survived by a sister and six brothers, all at home except for Private First Class Thomas Dillon, fighting in the Pacific. The Office of War Information released the names of several other upstate Wisconsin boys on the casualty list. Among them on the Wounded in Europe list are Staff Sergeant Bernard Arsenault of Superior, Tech Sergeant Donald Coolis of Superior, Second Lieutenant Sigrid Wienens of Superior, and Tech 5 Willis Stream of Superior. Listed as killed in action in Europe are Private First Class David Francisco of Ashland, Sergeant John Osnes of Ashland, Second Lieutenant Lyman Plyer of Morse. Men missing in action in Europe include Sergeant Richard Josephson of Drummond, Private First Class Donald Walker of Superior, First Lieutenant Jaime Glasser of Superior, Sergeant James Raher of Station B in Superior, and Staff Sergeant Donald Soderland of Wentworth. Listed as prisoners in Germany, Private First Class John Pink, husband of Dolores Pink of Superior, Private First Class David Smolin of Washburn, Private Raymond Spieler of Hayward, Sergeant Orville Hyde of Bayfield, and Second Lieutenant Gustav Larson of Webster. And finally, big news from Germany. You may have heard during our World Report, Colonel Jim Dan Hill, on leave as president of Superior State Teachers College, has been named the military governor of Leipzig. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has more on that story.
Good evening, Lou. This news comes as a surprise to many here at the college. Not that Colonel Jim Dan Hill isn't up to the job, but just that he's making international news. Colonel Hill has been on leave for almost 5 years since he left with the National Guard. The 125th Field Artillery Battalion of the Army National Guard left Duluth on the gunboat Paducah, October of 1940. Colonel Hill attended artillery school in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and later became commander of an artillery regiment in England. He's been decorated by the French with a Croix de Guerre for exceptional services of war in the liberation of France. He was also named to the French Legion of Honor and holds the Air Medal for being part of the 35 air missions over France from D-Day to September 3rd. When the war is over and Colonel Hill is discharged, it is expected that he will return to STC as its president, Lou.
Well, thanks, Mike. And that, Jack, is the news.
So how do you come back as president of a small college after being the military governor of a major city?
Well, my guess is that the students won't be giving Colonel Hill any lip.
He might have them shot or something, eh? Thanks, Luke. Our forecast for this Thursday, April 19th, 1945, mostly cloudy and colder. It's been a damp, chilly spring so far, and tomorrow's no different. Look for a high of just 38 degrees, folks. Let's warm things up now with music time. Here's Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters, and there'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin on the Martin and McKenna Show.
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in. I want to be their boy, spread some joy when they take old Berlin. There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Brooklyn boys begin to take the joint apart and tear it down when they take old Berlin. They're gonna start a row and show 'em how we paint the town back in Kokomo. They're gonna take a hike through Hitler's Reich and change that Heil to what you know, Joe. There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in. You could never keep 'em happy down on the farm after they take Berlin.
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in. I want to be their boy, spread some joy when they take over Berlin.
And may I join you?
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Brooklyn boys begin to take the joint apart and tear it down when they take over Berlin. They're gonna start a row and show them how you paint the town back in Michigan. They're gonna take a hike through Hitler's Reich and change the Heil to give me some skin. There'll be a hot time
in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in. You're never gonna keep them happy down on the farm after they take Berlin.
A hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in.
Go marching in.
I want to be their boy, spread some joy when
they take Berlin. The Yanks go marching in.
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Brooklyn boys begin.
The boys begin
to take the joint apart and tear it down when they take Berlin.
There'll be a hot time in the town of Berlin when the Yanks go marching in.
You could never keep them happy down on the farm.
The life of these would never please, they'd shudder with alarm.
No, you couldn't keep them happy down on the farm after they take Berlin.
Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters with There'll Be a Hot Time in the Town of Berlin on station KUWS, of course. Hey, friends, City Market has a special shipment of chickens coming in tomorrow and Saturday. So get them while they're fresh at just 47 cents a pound. City Market also features some non-rationed canned foods. Sheesh, this looked like stuff every red-blooded American kid would hate.
You are the weirdest pitch man in the business.
Well, listen to this. Two cans of Campbell's Cream of Spinach soup for just 27 cents. Ugh. Diced beets, 5 cans for 69 cents. 6 16-ounce cans of lima beans for 75 cents. No wonder they're not rationed. Who'd want that stuff? So a walk, don't run, to the City Market at the corner of 11th and Tower. Or dial 4453. For their free citywide delivery. And remember, City Market welcomes your charge account.
What does the station sales manager say when he hears you carp on sponsors' products?
He doesn't understand. He likes lima beans.
And that's important? How?
How back at you, friends. The museum curator is up next, so on with the music. Here's Harry James and Pretty Kitty Callan with I'm Beginning to See the Light on the Martin and McKenna Show.
I wish I could say the same thing.
I never cared much for moonlit skies. I never winked back at fireflies. But now that the stars are in your eyes, I'm beginning to see the light. I never went in for afterglow or candlelight on the mistletoe. But now when you turn the lamp down low, I'm beginning to see the light. Used to ramble through the park, shadow boxing in the dark. Then you came and caused a spark that's a four-alarm fire now. I never made love by rainbows in my wine. But now that your lips are burning mine, I'm beginning to see the
Harry James and his orchestra with Pretty Kitty Callan. And I'm beginning to see the light, folks, on station KUWS.
Let me introduce Douglas County Museum Curator Gerald Stowe. Good evening, sir.
Yes, I particularly enjoyed Jack's forecast. More cloudy days ahead. I adore dark, wet, cold springs. It brings out that nice pale hue in everyone's skin.
You like that sickly, blood drained from the face look?
Yes, there's something unearthly about it.
I bet you like canned lima beans, too.
Oh, yes, I do. Especially the watery juice.
As stimulating as this conversation is, Mr. Stowe has information about a new exhibit at the museum.
Yes, it's exquisite. These items are from the 80s, when Superior was a bustling new community, before electric light ruined the wonders of a majestic evening. Mrs. Frank Hayes donated an autograph album that brought back a flood of memories for me. Yes, in this album are the names of those early settlers, see? Yes, I brought it for your perusal. These early settlers gathered at the Henry Hayes home to celebrate New Year's Eve in 1881. But it was more than that. We also celebrated the completion of the Northern Pacific Railroad, the first railway to reach Superior. Yes, it was a thrilling time.
Say, what's your name doing with all those old-timers?
Ha! Proof at long last. Just as I suspected. You are the guy who never ages. A regular Pounce Delane.
Or something like that. I'm sure there's an explanation, Mr. Stowe.
Yes, I'm sure there is, though I can't think of one right now. I'll have to get back to you on that one. Yes, another relic of the gay 80s is an elaborate opera hat box that belonged to the late Mr. Henry Butler, who, yes, he was the most fastidious dresser in early Superior society. Yes, this box, if it was life-sized, I'd lie in it. It's lined in deep rose velvet. It's one of heavy leather and initialed H.B. with a lock and key. His opera hat was always immaculate. Yes, I remember him wearing it with his tails and opera cape.
Much like the cape you like to wear.
Yes, capes never go out of style. Oh, and the wonderful actors who performed at the opera house. The finest actors of the day. Yes, John Drew. He was so suave. And the stunning Julia Marlowe and Jane Addams. But Chauncey Alcott, he was one of my favorites. Yes, and everyone dressed in their finest formal attire for these gala affairs.
Let me get this straight now. How long have you been eating canned lima beans? Is there some kind of weird no-aging thing in lima beans?
Thank you, Mr. Gerald Stowe, Douglas County Museum Director.
Yes, you're always welcome, Mr. Martin.
Well, the fair and square kids are in next, folks.
Oh, I like those little cuties. I'd like to meet Uncle Bob, too. Can I stay a little longer?
I don't see why not.
I'll stay out of the way, in the shadows. I'll be over there in the corner. I like corners.
Fine.
He might scare the dickens out of the little rascals.
Pull yourself together. He's not too scary.
Well, he gives me the willies. On with the music anyway, good listeners. Here's Jimmy Dorsey and his orchestra and Tangerine on the Martin and McKenna Show.
As bright as flame, Tangerine. When she dances by, Senorita stare and Caballero sigh, and I've seen toasts to Tangerine raised in every bar across the Argentine. Yes, she has them all on the run, but her heart belongs to just one. Her heart belongs to Tangerine.
Jimmy Dorsey and Tangerine on station KUWS. Let me introduce Uncle Bob and the Fair and Square Kids.
Hi, boys and girls.
Hi, Uncle Bob.
We have quite a variety of stories and poems tonight, but before we begin, I want to say a sad goodbye to one of our members. Lorraine Armbruster of Iron River is now a high school graduate, so she is too old to be in the Fair and Square Club.
Her last poem was a little racy. She called it My Pinup Boy.
That's why we have age limits to our club, Lewis. Good luck, Lorraine. Gerda Gustafson, do you want to read your poem first?
Summer Fun by Gerda Gustafson. Summer is the bestest time for having lots of fun, so I'm going to make a little rhyme, and now I have begun. You can play and swim and fish or have other kinds of fun. You can wish and wish and wish. And now my poem is done.
Well, that was mediocre.
What's mediocre, Uncle Bob?
It means that was short. Nice and short, Gerda.
What she said bestest.
Wasn't that cute?
I suppose. So who's next? How about you, Joan Fonte? How about you, Joan Fonticchio of Superior? Do you have something without bestest in it?
Mine isn't very good, Uncle Bob, but I'll read it if you want.
Oh, modesty. Now, isn't that sweet?
I call it Maddie's Wants and Wishes. I wish I had a piece of calico to make my doll a dress. I doesn't want a big piece. A yard will do, I guess. I wish you'd friend my needle and find my thimble, too. I have such heaps of sewing, I don't know what to do. I want to go to Grandma's. You promised me I might. I know she wants to see me. I want to go tonight. I wish I had 3 or 4 pennies to buy some butterscotch. The end.
Okay, then, Joni. That was rather,
offensive. I think that's the word you're looking for. I'm going to play one more song here so that we can regroup. It's Dinah Shore and Shoe Fly Pie and Apple Pan Dowdy on the Martin and McKenna Show.
And Dowdy makes your eyes light up. Your tummy say holly. Shoe fly pie and apple pan. Dowdy, I never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Shoe fly pie and apple pan. Dowdy makes the sun come out when heavens are cloudy. Shoe fly pie and apple pan. Dowdy, I never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Mama, when you bake, Mama, I don't want cake, Mama, for my sake, go to the oven and make some ever-loving shoe fly pie and apple pan. Dowdy makes your eyes light up, your tummy say howdy, shoe fly pie and apple pan. Dowdy, I never get enough of that wonderful stuff. An apple pan, Dowdy, I never get enough of that wonderful stuff. Mama, when you start to bake, I don't want no cake. Mama, Mama, for my sake, go to the oven and make some ever-loving shoe fly pie. An apple pan, Dowdy, makes your eyes light up. Your tummy say howdy, shoe fly pie and apple pan. Dowdy, I never get enough of that wonderful stuff.
Shoe, apple pan, Dowdy,
makes your eyes light up.
The Fair and Square Kids are back with Uncle Bob, Boys and Girls in Radioland. Next is Eldon Wolaben of Butternut in Ashland County. You have something special for Uncle Bob?
Do I? It's a mystery poem whose first letter spells something out.
It seems we've been having a lot of mystery poems tonight.
This is better than those old girls' stuff. Mine is bestest.
Somebody's English teacher should be fired.
Ready? Keep track of what this spells out. Vernon vends vegetables. Irvin is impossible. Carl cultivates corn. Tommy taps tomatoes. Orville opens onions. Richard rakes rubbish. And Yogel yearns yams.
Yogel?
That's the first word. Now here's the second one. George grows greens. Alan aids asparagus. Robert raises radishes. Donald digs dirt. Earl evens endive. Nathan nips neatly. So, what's that spell, Uncle Bob?
Uncle Bob doesn't like being quizzed by his Fair and Square Kids in front of everybody.
Give him a minute, Eldon. He'll figure it out.
Vegetables and Irvin is impossible. Carl cultivates corn. Say, let's hear from Bernice Shankle of Shell Lake.
We're the Shankles of Shell Lake, Uncle Bob. My poem is called Summertime. Summertime is almost here, and flowers will be in bloom. Fall will be here in October, and then there will be snow on the ground. The end.
Work long and hard on that, did we, Bernice?
It's not easy being cute all the time, you know. The pressure is pretty bad.
The Fair and Square Kids are always talented, smart, clever kids. And you are too, Bernice.
And cute. Don't forget cute.
Yes, of course, cute.
Modest, too.
Yes, they are quite adorable.
Look at that guy.
Yes, greetings, boys and girls.
It's Dracula.
Neat cape, mister. And what happened to your face? It looks like you've lived in a basement and never come out.
Yes, how charming.
Endearing.
They are particularly adorable tonight.
Yes, I think it's best I depart now.
Probably a good idea.
That was Uncle Bob's friend, Mr. Strange Guy. Boys and girls, there's nothing to fear.
But why does he look so spooky, Uncle Bob?
Probably eats too many lima beans.
Well, Uncle Bob, did you figure it out?
Uncle Bob knows his boys and girls, and I know your poem spelled out Victory Garden.
Aw, you got it.
Ha! That was a good one, though, Eldon. I've got to hand it to you, but you can't fool old Uncle Bob. And that's it, boys and girls. Remember, it's not fair to be square in the Fair and Square Club.
That doesn't sound right.
Remember, boys and girls, it's not square to be fair in the Fair and Square Club.
Probably been eating too many lima beans.
Yeah, no lima beans.
Good night!
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1945, an original weekly production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Paul Guggenheimer, Duke Skorich, John Munson, John Munsell, Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1945 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week for more Radio Superior. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.